everyone. Welcome to another episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. I'm your host and Vice President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, Dave Perry. On today's show, which we're recording June 30th, 2020, we're going to be speaking with Brigadier Nicholas Orr about what's going on for defense in the United Kingdom. Brigadier Orr is the UK defense advisor to Canada, and he joins us from Ottawa. Brigadier Orr, welcome to Defense Deconstructed.
Dave, good morning. Really good to have an opportunity to chat. Thank you.
So we're having this conversation here in what is now the middle of a already warm summer of 2020, and you've been here for a while in your current posting, and I'll get you to talk a little bit about that in a minute, but just before we get into that, give us a little sense of your background, because this isn't the first time that you've been sent here as a military officer to Canada, is it?
No, I've been really fortunate to have had two previous tours, and I say in your, I'm not being a sycophant, but I do find your wonderful country. Place, country, people are all what has drawn me back again. But I first came here in 88 because we've got a large training area over in the west in Alberta that we use, but more about that in a second. But then my first sort of long-term posting for 2 years, 95 to 97, was in the Army Tactics School at the Combat Training Center in Gagetown, New Brunswick. And that was a really satisfying time. And dare I say it, in spite of my training technique, it's been really wonderful to see some of the people whom I trained now at the top of the Army and the top of the CAF, as 2- and 3-star officers, which is excellent. And then I came back again in 2001 to 2003 to CFP Suffield over in Alberta, where the British Army maintains a really super training area courtesy of the Canadian Armed Forces. And we train large armoured groupings there, and we have done for over 50 years. And I was on the staff there planning and executing exercises for battle group live fire and simulation, which was really wonderful. And then I came back a couple of years ago as the defence advisor, which is we can talk more about in a second, though.
And so just before we jump into that, before we do, and as I mentioned at the outset, you're here as a brigadier, which in the Canadian system would be brigadier general. And that's a little bit atypical for the different defense advisors and attachés in Canada, because they're generally at either the colonel or navy captain level or sometimes below that. So just before you talk more generally about the position, why is it at the rank level that it is?
A really good question. I mean, I would just say as one of our oldest and strongest allies, particularly in the defense realm, we see the strength of that kinship and that relationship, and that manifests itself in having a 1-star officer here. It's something we do for all of the Five Eyes countries, with the exception of New Zealand. That's purely by dint of size of its armed force, and a few other countries as well. But as I say, I mean, it typifies that relationship. And if I can just read briefly a quote that I came up with when I first arrived, I believe very strongly that we have a relationship between our countries that's yes, based on history and tradition, but I think Canada and UK see each other as like-minded partners and allies suitable for the 21st century as well as in the past. And I think it's a living and thriving relationship that encapsulates both credibility and currency. So that's the way I see the relationship.
And so in your time here as the defense advisor, I guess, how would you describe your role in contributing to that relationship? And what are the general types of activities and objectives that you've been trying to achieve in your position during your time?
Overall, the role is very much that I help the link between Departments of National Defense and the Ministry of Defense based in London. And as I say, I mean, I think it's a really close relationship. Our Secretary of State and Minister for National Defense know each other well. They meet up, albeit virtually at the moment, several times a year. And certainly our two CHARs speak to each other frequently and have been on operations with each other, as well as seeing a lot of each other at the moment. So that's the basis of a good relationship is there, because the basis of a really strong relationship is the people knowing each other. But from my perspective, what I do is just try and make sure that we exploit the opportunities that are presented to actually execute some operations together, or look at where our policies overlap and see where we can learn from each other. That's particularly in the HR domain, where people is obviously our key strength. Capabilities, what capabilities we're both looking at developing, and how we can get and enhance our interoperability between equipment so that we can operate more successfully with each other on operations. And that obviously brings us into the procurement realm. So I lean into that. And then there's the whole intelligence sharing dynamic, which obviously the Five Eyes epitomizes, that is such a key part of our relationship as well. So making sure all those mesh together and we exploit our relationship with each other is a key part of the job.
Since you brought up the procurement angle, I would think that the particular emphasis of that aspect of the job would wax and wane depending on different procurement cycles. And as it happens, you're here at a time when Canada has selected a design that's used by your Royal Navy for our future surface combatants for the Navy. And the fighter selection that we are hopefully about to get underway here soon when we get the bids in the summer, it doesn't have a British original equipment manufacturer in it, but certainly the British aerospace industry is quite involved in some of the bids. So maybe just expand on that a little bit. What role do you play in trying to facilitate that capability commonality or interoperability when it comes to procurement? What role does the defense advisor play when it comes to helping Canada go about procuring its own equipment?
The whole area of procurement is obviously massively complex in both our countries. We do have two very different processes as to how we go about procuring equipment. But at the end of the day, what we're both wanting is battle-winning equipment that's going to help our credibility and capability into the future. But my role within that is very clear. What I'm trying to do, as I say, at the end of it, is enhance interoperability. Then obviously I'd be fraudulent if I didn't say there was something on the prosperity agenda there as well. And working with the UK Department for International Trade is an important part of what we do, so that we can look at the capabilities that both we are developing in the UK and Canada is wanting to exploit, and see where there are synergies, where there is overlap, and where we might be able to mutually help each other in terms of developing our capabilities. And if it comes to it, introducing British defence industry into the D&D so that they can see as to whether they might be likely competitors or likely providers of future operation capability. But it's very much looking from my perspective at ensuring that we can operate closely to each other with each other in the future. That's the key bit.
And I guess the timing in some of these programs is actually lined up quite well in the sense that I guess both of our respective countries have a quite, I guess you could say, an active capability acquisition program going on at the moment. So I guess maybe as a bit of a segue into having a conversation about what's kind of on the radar for defense in the United Kingdom, maybe a good transition is to talk a little bit about some of the programs that the United Kingdom's got underway at the moment, recognizing that you have several of them that are underway.
Thanks. So the big one for us is the Future Frigate Program, what we are calling the Type 26, and what you're currently calling the Canadian Surface Combatant Program, looking at the procurement of 15 new surface ships for the Royal Canadian Navy. It's a really exciting program. Anything to do with shipbuilding is obviously massively complex, huge amounts of money involved. But the really good news is that three countries within the Five Eyes community are looking at the same type of ship, BAE Systems, a global combat ship, and therefore how they can operate closely with each other, how we can look at sustaining them and what capabilities they will share within those platforms is all important. And there is a working group between the three countries looking at bringing all those issues together and seeing, as I say, where we can exploit those synergies. In terms of other programs, we were originally sponsoring a bid for the Future Fighter Capability Project, and we were sponsoring Typhoon with Airbus Germany. We've actually withdrawn that submission now. That bid felt that it wasn't going to result in a success for us. But obviously, we keep a keen eye on that competition, because there are still British vested interests in some of the other bids as well, whether it be in the F-35 or the Gripen aircraft, which I know are both still competing for that. Other areas of development are really significant, and it ranges from land systems, maritime and air systems, and is certainly looking at exploiting where we might be able to work together in space and cyber as well. So I believe very firmly that we need to continue working closely with each other as those capabilities are developed.
Listening to an episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. These engaging conversations from the front lines of policy and politics are brought to you by the Canadian Association of Defense and Security Industries.
And so that effort is underway as you back home in the UK have a fairly significant, as I understand it, exercise undergoing your latest security and defense review. Tell us a little bit about that and what that effort is looking like back home.
Our new government launched the integrated review on security, defence, development and foreign policy in February this year. And the Prime Minister launched it, saying it was going to be the biggest review since the end of the Cold War. And it did go into abeyance for a short period during the initial reaction to the COVID crisis. But since then, it's just been relaunched. And the aim is to report back in November this year. You can tell from the title that its purpose is very much to be an integrated review across government and looks at all our capabilities in the security, defence, development and foreign policy realm. And obviously primary amongst those will be the foreign policy part. But it needs to be integrated across government so that at the end of it, we understand where we want the UK to be in the world, what government ambition we have for the UK, how we're going to work with allies, importantly, what capabilities we require for at least the next decade, what government structures and processes are required in order to support those mechanisms. And finally, an important part of it is obviously how we would then go about implementing it. Because we've got to have an ability to transition from where we are currently into the new proposal, whatever it comes out at the end of the review.
And as the government has announced it and outlined what it's trying to do, is there any particular motivating factor that it's outlined, or is it more sort of a time-based type of an exercise because you folks haven't had this kind of a review for a couple of years now?
It's time-based. The aim is, again, the Prime Minister is very keen to move on with this swiftly. It said it's going to report in November this year. And the only two real commitments it's made as part of it is that it will continue to have 2% of the GDP spent on defence and 0.7% of the GNI on international development. And those are both seen as important within as goals for the government to maintain. But other than that, it is obviously an open book. Yes, we're fixed to a degree where we are, but that doesn't prevent us from wanting to move somewhere else into the future.
So you just made the comment there about taking where things are right now. I guess for an audience here that is effectively inundated with news about COVID and not all that much, especially about what's happening internationally, what is the state of the British Armed Forces right now? Maybe start with operationally, drawing from a Canadian experience where we've had to at least initially scale back quite significantly some of the operations that we had globally when the COVID pandemic spread. Where is the United Kingdom's Armed Forces and the Ministry of Defence kind of going into this review at a high level? What's the kind of the operational tempo? What parts of the world do you have troops in? Paint a bit of a picture about what the pre-reviews status quo looks like.
Thank you. Operationally, certainly overseas operations, we have very much concentrated on maintaining all those operations and commitments that we've taken on and have not reduced our commitments to those operations during the crisis. That's obviously given us a few challenges in terms of preparing people, recovering people, and ensuring the next team are trained up, ready to go. But it's something we've managed to maintain, which we're very proud of. Equally, the number of operations that we've been involved in on the home front, primarily in support of the government authorities in reaction to the COVID crisis, has obviously created quite a lot of extra tasks for the military. And similar to Canadian Armed Forces, we stood up a large number of people on standby for possible tasks to come our way. And at one stage, we had upwards of about 3,000 service personnel committed to supporting government efforts to combat the crisis. And a number of those are still committed at the moment. But in terms of commitments worldwide, majority of our commitments are either under UN, NATO, or other coalition formations. And as I say, we have continued those, whether that be maritime deployment in the Mediterranean and in the Far East. We've maintained a capability in the Caribbean for the react to climatic events, should that be required. We have air assets both in the Middle East, Near East, and around the UK. Plus, we are supporting the NATO policing operations as and when required. And military and army-wise, we have maintained our EFP battle group in Estonia as part of the enhanced forward presence troops, NATO troops in that area. We maintained our support to Iraq and Syrian region, and we have kept up short-term training teams to various countries around the world in order to ensure that we can continue that engagement and use our soft power effectively.
So as you're reflecting on that list of the different operational commitments, can you give a sense of how much is that similar to or different than, say, a 5 or 10 year period ago? Is that, you know, a kind of a commensurate pace of operations? Is this more than it has been? And then as the second question, maybe just talk a little bit about what type of activities the UK Armed Forces actually did to assist the British government in responding to the COVID pandemic.
So I think comparisons to 10 years ago are very different, because 10 years ago, we were still very much committed and to Iraq and Afghanistan. And though we remain committed to those two countries, we are not committed to the same degree that we were 10 years ago, when it was very much the coalitions there were dominating all Western media and our actions were being reported on a daily basis. So now our footprint is spread about the world to a far greater degree, albeit possibly not quite the same numbers. But we, as part of NATO and other coalitions, are looking about where our capabilities and where our influence is best used in order to try and bring peace and stability to those regions that we think we can influence. And that remains a real importance to us. Obviously, our ability now to deploy further abroad is also being enhanced. And one of the key areas of capability that we've developed or are developing at the moment before formally declaring full operating capability is our carrier strike group. And the Queen Elizabeth carrier is due to go on her first operational deployment next year and is due to go through the Mediterranean into the Middle East and possibly as far as the Far East as well. And that obviously is a huge commitment as far as UK and defence is concerned. And we need to maximise that capability to the best of our ability. In terms of our support to COVID within the UK, as I say, we had a large number of troops put on standby to assist the government authorities. The main areas that we developed and helped the local authorities in throughout have been in the terms of logistics and transportation of PPE in particular. Also in the area of creating, in England, what termed as the Nightingale Hospitals, which increased our capacity or the capacity of the NHS in terms of a bed provision. And there were several set up around the country, many of which remain, albeit some of them on standby and not actually being used at the moment. And one other area and a few other areas we've been involved in have been on the testing and setting up testing sites, in particular mobile testing sites around the UK. Those have been developed by the military and are still being run by the military, albeit there are civilian organisations now being trained up to take over that capability from the military.
And I guess aside from the COVID question, the one other question that I'm not sure is actually permitted to speak to someone coming from the United Kingdom without asking them about Brexit. So I'll ask about Brexit and whether or not you've seen to this point in time or are anticipating that will have much of an impact at all on the armed forces and the British MOD.
I think the couple of things I'll say on Brexit is, A, Brexit is done. We have now left the European Union, but we are obviously still very much part of Europe. And the other thing I will say about this whole process is the fact that the UK has always seen NATO as its key forum for defence. And so NATO is that which we look towards for defence purposes. This remains the case. We remain strong advocates for NATO. It remains current, credible, and collective as far as we're concerned. And that is where we place our defence effort. And obviously, we are really pleased to work alongside Canada with the role it plays within NATO now and both into the future as well.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us to give kind of a snapshot on where our strong allies in the United Kingdom are at the moment. The last question I'll ask of you is, as you're heading towards the rest of your summer, is what you're reading in the midst of this pandemic and a nice evening and weekend time to spend in Ottawa while you're still here.
Great, thanks. See, my go-to book for most of the time is actually a selection of poems put together by General Wavell, the late Lord Wavell, called Other Men's Flowers. And it's a really good reference book just to look at and look at some of the wonderful poetry that he brought together and some of the commentary that he annotated alongside it as well. And to me, it's just something that I can pick up at any time and just look up a poem that will hopefully suit the mood at the time.
Okay. Brigadier, once again, thank you very much for joining us on Defence Deconstructed.
Dave, thanks very much indeed. Bye.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Defense Deconstructed, part of the CGAI Podcast Network. Our guest today was Brigadier Nicholas Worth, the United Kingdom's Defense Advisor to Canada. If you like the show, please remember to rate us and leave a comment on your podcast app. And if you like our stuff, please feel free to check out our donation page at cgai.ca. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. The podcast is brought to you by our team in Ottawa. And thanks go to our producer, Jay Rankin, and Drew Phillips for providing our music. I'm Dave Perry, and thanks for listening to this episode of Defense Deconstructed.